document which he has sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levin brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
Just don't put Mark Levin too far from his constitution.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
And let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It was a sickeningly familiar sight. Sickeningly familiar newspaper stories. You know what it is. A guy walks into a restaurant. He's got an AK-47. He shoots randomly, without remorse, killing strangers, innocent civilians. People hide under the table, pretend to be dead. I don't know, but if you're the way I am, you read those stories and you think, what would you do if a gunman walked in where you live, where you work, where you eat, and you were forced to dive under a table, get shot at, and pretend to be dead? We've heard these stories in the United States. We know about them as even in Virginia Tech. Now it's in Mumbai, the more modern name for Bombay, India. Bombay is the capital, if you will, the financial capital, not the political capital, but the financial capital, the social capital of India, a democracy that's really, for a third world country, has been fairly stable. I mean, it's existed for some 60 years, and they came in and they turned it into terror. What is to be done about this? What should India do? What should Pakistan do? What should the United States do to prevent these kind of terrorist attacks? At the very least, it reminds us that terrorism is not over, that it's a scourge that we still have to fight. The only question really is, what is to be done about it? I've invited today as my guest Mike Lane. He is a Republican strategist. He is the president of Intellifant Strategies. It's his job to give strategy to the elephants. And we're going to talk about more than Mumbai this hour. We're going to talk about gambling, both internet gambling and the kind of gambling that goes on Wall Street, the kind of gambling that I claim led to the economic crisis. But first, let's start in Mumbai. Mike, it appears that there's a shadowy group called Lashkar-e-Taiba out of Pakistan. They have not taken responsibility for it, although preliminary forensic evidence suggests that they are behind it. And the one man of the 10 young men they captured claims he was from Lashkar-e-Taiba, at least that's from India. This group comes out of the conflict between Pakistan and India over Kashmir. They are trained in Pakistan, and of course we've seen what horrific violence they can commit. What should the United States do about these training camps in Pakistan?
Well, right now I'm comfortable with letting India and Pakistan handle this whole thing, being facilitated, of course, by the United States. Secretary Rice is over in the Middle East as we, or the Far East as we speak. She'll conduct some shuttle diplomacy back and forth between Pakistan and India. Tensions and relations between Pakistan and India are always something of a yo-yo. Right now, they're at the low end of the yo-yo. Things are really strung out, and it's incumbent upon the Pakis, I think, at this point, for them to come clean. They need to conduct a full investigation. They need to be 100% transparent about everything they know, about everything that took place, about things that they might not have known that they discovered. And the key thing is here that this group that you just mentioned not only trains in Pakistan and not only has their home in Pakistan, not only has their bases in Pakistan, but they have very, very close ties to the Pakistani intelligence agency. And if there is any indication that the Paki intelligence agency knew this was going to happen, then correct action has to be taken there. But I don't think the United States needs to launch warships or get involved physically at this point. It's right now in the very, very preliminary stage, and India is saying all the right things. India has the outrage. India has the anger. India is the one that can say, we've really got to resolve this tomorrow, and India is saying, no, we're going to let Pakistan show us over the next several days exactly how transparent they're going to be. Let's see what comes out of it.
Well, I have extreme sympathy for India, for the Indian people. I don't know how anyone worldwide could not.
Over 300 terror, people dead, they think.
That's correct, and the terror was horrific, and this hotel, it's almost a symbol of India, Taj Mahal Hotel, was in flames.
It would be more important than New York's Plaza Hotel being taken on something like this.
They're calling it India's 9/11, yeah. And I think that is an appropriate term. Now, India, of course, is a long-time democracy. I don't think sometimes India gets enough credit. I mean, here is an extremely poor country, the second largest populous country in the world, that has teeming poverty, and it has managed to maintain a democracy for some 60 years. I've always felt, frankly, the United States needs to have closer ties with India, as I feel we should with all democracies throughout the globe. I don't, with Pakistan, I'm a lot less charitable, shall we say. I'm glad they are a new democracy. Mm-hmm. I wish them well. But Pakistan doesn't have this kind of stability, democracy, really tolerance for human rights that India has shown for the last 60 years. Pakistan, apparently there are still Al-Qaeda, Taliban camps in Pakistan. There's this group, Lashkar-e-Taiba. What do you think is the best way we can help Pakistan help itself? Because I fear the Pakistani government, while I'm sympathetic to it, just doesn't have the strength to control its own country.
Well, you know, they don't. Back in the good old days, you know, should we all be wishing for Musharraf's return to strongman in Pakistan, even he did not have complete control over the entire Pakistani population. We know that Al-Qaeda and many tribes run fairly freely up in the western mountains of Pakistan. We know that Musharraf was generally a friend of the United States, but had some duplicitous actions once in a while. We know that when they had an election and power was voluntarily transferred away from Musharraf to the new president, who was, I believe, the husband of the intended candidate, Benazir Bhutto, then we started the whole thing as to how much control was he going to be able to establish, not being a strong man, over the disparate and the disinterested and even the hostile populations in Pakistan. I think we found out that he doesn't have as tight a control as perhaps we would have wanted him to have as a result of this whole thing. So, you know, it remains to be seen how the Pakistani government and how the Pakistani president reacts in the week to come.
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying.
And this is his chance to shine. Or is his chance to, you know, really not be the guy?
Are you really saying Musharraf was the good old days, back when they were under this dictator? I would think you'd want to promote democracy.
I'm
a good sign.
I'm saying that Musharraf would have been a much more predictable ally at this point, that he would have rooted out the existing camps once they were found. He would have turned them over to justice, and that we don't know where the Pakis are going to go at this point. We don't know who runs Pakistan. We knew Musharraf ran Pakistan. We knew where the accountability was. We don't know if the intelligence service runs Pakistan or the president runs Pakistan. It's unclear, Mark.
I got you.
And we hate uncertainty.
Mike, I disagree. I think that Musharraf was not in charge. I think that he took some $10 billion of our dollars. And most of it was spent on shoring up his dictatorship. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda ran pretty free in Pakistani wilderness areas. And at least this Pakistani government is a democracy, and I think it's trying. I just don't think it has the power, but at least I think it has the will. And I'm not so sure Musharraf had the will. Here's my question in general. When you've got a government that doesn't have complete control over its own territory, mm-hmm. and terrorists are doing horrific things from that territory, it seems to me that the world can take responsibility to help that country when it can't help itself. Now, if Pakistan could take care of these people, I'd be absolutely supportive of Pakistan taking care of these people. But Barack Obama pointed out in his election campaign, it was a frequent bone of contention between him and John McCain in the debates, that if he had actionable intelligence, that Pakistan was harboring a terrorist group like Al-Qaeda, like Lashkar-e-Taiba, and they had actionable intelligence, meaning not just intelligence, but actionable. They could take action. They could destroy these people. And Pakistan was either unwilling or unable, and I think in this case it's unable, not unwilling, but unable to take them out itself. Obama made clear that he wouldn't take that option off the table, that he could go in and take action. And it seems to me that we need to take action. Osama bin Laden is still alive and well, and we shouldn't be constrained by a country that can't protect itself.
Well, Mark, first of all, I think it is unable and unwilling. I don't see that the Pakistani government has the backbone or the spine at this point to go after the people in the Northwest provinces, the part where they don't really control. They've shown no tendency since power has changed. Musharraf didn't show a tendency to do anything other than token
patrols
out there.
So is it an argument for us?
No. I was being tongue-in-cheek when I said the good old days of Musharraf. I said we at least knew Musharraf. We knew how predictable he was. We knew how he would react. We don't know how the current Pakistani government's going to react. I don't know that, you know, at the end of the day, we're not going to be happy or disappointed in what the new Pakistani government says or more importantly, does. As far as what we should do if we have actionable intelligence, well, you know, the first thing you do is you don't telegraph what you're going to do. That was President-elect Obama's single biggest mistake in this particular issue. By going up there and rattling the saber and declaring he was going to invade the territorial integrity of a sovereign country by going in there. What you do is you do that quietly, and you do that without any announcement, and hopefully you do it clandestinely so you can take these things out and people don't know where the intelligence came from, you know, et cetera. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that John McCain would have done exactly what Obama said he was going to do. Obama's big mistake was in saying it and telegraphing it, and I doubt that Obama has the guts to actually do it when it comes to it, but we'll see.
Here's Obama saying he's going to do it. John McCain saying he's not.
John McCain said he wasn't.
Yes, he did.
No,
originally he did.
No, John McCain said, we're not going to talk about this. This is not the kind of stuff you talk about.
That's what he said in the more recent debate. Right. In the older debates, he said, no, we don't do this. No. The irony about all of this is Obama says he will, but McCain said he won't, and you're telling me, but Obama says he will, but he really won't, and
I can give you a list of 237 things that Obama said during the campaign that he's reneged himself on and reversed himself on just since he was elected president. The fact is, Obama has no tracker. There's no reason to believe he will or won't do it. He's a saber rattler. He's inexperienced. We'll see what he does.
Let's deal with the principle here. I know you just want to attack the new president. Deal with the principle here.
I'd be glad to see him take action
under those circumstances. Here, and then we can talk about whether it's going to be covert or overt. I want to make sure, first of all, we agree on the principle. I would hope we agree. And some may think that this is a warmongering stance I'm taking, but I would hope we'd agree that when a country harbors terrorists, it is certainly, first of all, that country's responsibility to do something about it. But when that country is unwilling or unable to act, that the rest of the world can take action. And I agree with you. India
sounds a lot like Iraq.
I agree. Huh? Well,
sounds a lot like Iraq.
Not at all. In Iraq was not harboring any terrorists.
They were
attacking anybody else.
They weren't.
They weren't harboring Al-Qaeda. They didn't have any relationship with Al-Qaeda.
Saddam himself was a terrorist. Saddam Hussein himself was a terrorist.
When you start calling every dictator in the world a terrorist, suddenly we've got to attack China, we have to attack some very dangerous countries.
Look, Saddam himself was a terrorist. He needed to be removed from office. It's not worth our while to revisit this tonight. Let's stick with the question of Pakistan, which is what we do. If there's actionable intelligence, if we can go in there and make a reasonable chance at success of a useful strike,
I'd like to see you support the Obama position. I'm really glad to hear that.
I support the Obama position. I'd like to see Obama support the Obama.
I'm really glad to hear you say finally that you agree that Obama was right and McCain was wrong.
No.
It's terrific to hear that from you, Mike.
Obama was dead wrong.
Seeing the winds of change.
Obama was dead wrong when he talked about it. Dead wrong.
You know, there's this
notion. You don't talk about invading other countries.
We're going to take a break.
It's not the way you do
these things. We're going to take a break. But there's this notion, this strange notion, that if you just don't talk about it, it doesn't happen.
It's clandestine.
That's not the way the law works.
It should be clandestine. It should be covert.
After the break, let's talk about that.
It should be clandestine.
I think it should be overt. I think if we're willing to do a war, we should be able to defend it overtly. I want to hear what our listeners say. You're welcome to call in and join the discussion. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back.
I need a job.
Necesito trabajo.
I would like to speak English better.
Me gustaría hablar inglés mejor.
I want to be a U.S. citizen.
Quisiera ser ciudadano de los Estados Unidos.
For over 35 years.
Por más de 35 años.
The Hispanic Committee of Virginia has been serving our community.
El Comité Hispano de Virginia ha estado sirviendo a nuestra comunidad.
Job training and placement.
Capacitación, ayuda para conseguir trabajo.
Education for children and adults.
Educación para niños y adultos.
Immigration, naturalization, and medical referrals.
Ayuda para los procesos de inmigración y naturalización y orientación sobre médicos
are a small part of what we do.
Son solo una pequeña parte de lo que hacemos.
For help, information, or to volunteer,
para ayuda, información, o para ofrecerse como voluntario,
contact the Hispanic Committee of Virginia.
Comuníquese con el Comité Hispano de Virginia.
Helping everyone participate more fully in American society.
Ayudando a todos a participar plenamente en la sociedad norteamericana.
Would you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease, and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call for a free brochure. Because when it comes to chronic kidney disease, you might not know the half.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Mike Lane. He is the president of Intellifin Strategies. He is the Republican here. I'm the Democrat. We're both, though, very concerned about the terrorist acts in Mumbai. It appears that, in fact, they came by a rubber dinghy to the shores of Bombay, which certainly, in a democracy like India, we already are having heads roll, and they should roll. We certainly should have coasts protected, whether it be in the United States or India. And they came, apparently just 10 young men killed 300 people, wounded double that number, and shut down the city for 3 days. It is called India's 9/11. And the question is what to do about it. And what's interesting to me is in the debates, you may remember, Obama said if we have actionable intelligence and a country is unwilling or unable to take acts against terrorism, he would take them out. McCain said, no, they can't do that. I'm glad to hear that Mike seems to say that Obama's right. He just thinks that Obama and McCain weren't telling the truth. He thinks Obama wouldn't do anything and McCain would. Let me raise this. You said the difference, Mike, is basically we should act, but we shouldn't tell anyone about it. Let me suggest to you that that's a typical Republican mentality. Covert action, don't tell the world what we're doing, let's have secret prisons, let's have secret torture, the world won't find out about it, we'll, you know, throw away the Constitution of the United States, no one will know, and we won't look bad. Let me suggest to you that if it's okay to do it, if it's just to do it, then we should do so overtly and honestly and defend it to the world. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about saying, Al-Qaeda, we're going to attack you at 10, 12 a.m. on a Friday. No, of course, I'm not talking about that. But in terms of general principles, the idea that if there's a terrorist training camp, we might go in and stop it. If we say this openly, first of all, Pakistan, to the extent that it is unwilling to help, might just realize, oh, we better do something, or, you know, one of our mountainous compounds might get bombed. And as long as we can defend ourselves and say to the world, we have a right to act in self-defense, India has a right to act in self-defense, to respond to these terrorist acts, then we can defend ourselves to the world, and we don't have to rely on secret prisons and torture, because you know what? They find out about it anyway. And then we just look like hypocrites.
All right, Mark. The first thing I'm going to do is correct the record. John McCain's point was not that we wouldn't do this. John McCain's point was that we don't talk about this. You never talk about covert operations. You never talk in advance about invading the sovereign country without permission of another thing. And, you know, for you to mischaracterize what John McCain said during the campaign is not going to stand. Now that we've corrected the record on that,
I'll get you
let's talk about what the Democrats typically want to do on this and why I don't trust President Obama or President-elect Obama to do this. Number one, we're going to invade, you want to say, openly now, not covertly. We want to invade openly a sovereign country.
I wouldn't say invade. I don't believe in invading. I think that you can take out a terrorist.
Suppose it's troops that are necessary.
Well, I don't believe... there's a difference between invading and occupying a country, okay, like we did in Iraq.
Right.
And, for example, the
right,
first missiles that,
do we get,
that right, Bill Clinton sent into Afghanistan.
And blew up the aspirin factory while he was at...
Well,
you know,
he apparently missed Bin Laden
right,
by 4 hours.
Now, here's the question. You know, are we going to get UN permission to do this first?
No. And Obama said
we're
no.
Gonna, we're,
right.
Why not? I thought the Democrats always
wanted... We don't need
UN
permission.
You
can make that up, but there's no Democrat that
says that. Okay, there's no direct threat to the United States from this camp sitting there.
No.
It's a direct threat to India.
In the case of Lashkar-e-Taiba, I agree
with
you.
Why are we going to go against them?
In the case of Lashkar-e-Taiba, I agree with you. It is primary Indian responsibility. I support India responding, but if India will get world support... I think, because I don't want
India
to respond.
Does India need to go to the United Nations? Does India need to go to the United Nations?
No one needs to go to the United Nations to defend themselves. Every country has in the United Nations Charter the inherent right of self-defense. Now, I don't want to see a huge war start between India and Pakistan. So India should make its case publicly, just
okay,
as we should about Al-Qaeda.
All right, so if
these terrorists
so
have done awful things, if you have to prove that they did it. And then if they did it, yes, I think India
right,
has the right to respond, just as we have the right,
right
to respond
so
to Al-Qaeda.
So if Barack Obama is not going to get UN permission to invade another country and take military action, to invade another country and take military action against them,
I don't know what you're
let
using,
me ask you
hold
this.
Hold on, you're using the word invade.
Yes.
In your view, it's invading to drop a bomb on a terrorist training camp, destroy it, and never lend ground troops there?
That's a military invasion, yes.
Okay, I disagree. I don't consider that an invasion.
Mark, if you send military forces across a sovereign border into another country without permission, unwelcome to take military action, that is an invasion.
Okay, that's not
okay,
the word I would use. Let's say
okay,
an attack.
That's an invasion.
Let's call it an attack.
Right,
to me, an invasion means an
right,
occupying
so
army.
We're not gonna, so now we're not going to get UN support the way you
not,
always demand Republicans.
No, wait.
Are we
no
get,
Democrat
are we gonna
has
have,
ever said
okay, are we
that
have
a country needs UN support before it acts.
Are we going to have a congressional vote on this?
For an attack?
For an invasion of Pakistan. Are we going to have congressional vote?
Of course not.
We're not going to have a congressional vote.
For a pinprick attack on a training camp? Absolutely not.
We're not going to get congressional vote.
No,
okay.
Clinton didn't get it in Afghanistan.
Are we going to share the intelligence on this with the heads of the intelligence committees before we do it?
It depends. Depends how much time you have. Sure, if you can.
Mark, before Obama became president, we had enough time to do everything. There was always enough time to do everything.
That's not true.
Now all of a sudden it depends on how much time we have?
That's not true at all.
Mark,
you are
you
always
that
one attack on a terrorist training camp, like Bill Clinton did in Afghanistan, like
no.
Israel did in Syria, like, taking out one group of terrorists is somehow the same as occupying a nation for 7 years with 160,000 troops, costing $1 trillion, and overthrowing a government. Let me suggest
crossing
to you
a sovereign
that you
border,
are comparing a fly with a swarm.
Crossing a sovereign border with a military force against the will of that country
we did that
for purposes of carrying out a military action is an invasion. Okay? That's an invasion. I just want
I'm
to know
sure
what you're comfortable
liberal,
with.
Who's the conservative?
No. What I'm doing is I'm pointing out the ludicrousy of the Obama argument back during the campaign and how all of a sudden now when he had his first... Did you see the deer in the headlights when after his very first military intelligence brief, they asked him about it in his press conference, and he just went, you know.
He's not going to talk about his military intelligence briefing
right,
in public.
He had the deer in the headlights look. He found out there was a real dangerous world out there.
You are doing
and
your best
he's
to
going
attack
to,
Barack Obama.
No, I'm not doing that.
Can.
No, what I'm doing
I get that.
No, I'm pointing out how wrong he was during the campaign and how much I like what you're saying now. And let's see if he has the guts to do what you're saying.
All I'm saying is Obama's going to do what he said he was going to do.
He's reneged on over 200 promises so far. Why would he carry this one out?
You know, you're just throwing numbers around. He hasn't reneged on anything.
Okay,
yet.
Well, we can talk. Let's do a whole show on reneged promises.
He's not even
let's do a whole show on
inaugurated yet.
Right, exactly.
And you're already
he's already taken
the
down. He's already backed off the 16-month thing.
My point, which I can't even tell whether you agree or disagree, because I'm giving you a philosophical point that I don't think Democrats and Republicans should disagree on, and you're using it to attack Obama.
No.
You know,
saying,
I understand that
no.
you just want to attack Obama.
No.
You're still angry about the campaign.
I agree with you, Mark. But you are a Johnny come lately to this position, and
not.
Barack Obama is a Johnny come lately to this
position.
Neither of us are.
We
both are.
Barack Obama for more than a year, and me, I mean, actually, for more, far more than a year, both of us, Obama and I for several years, have always agreed that every nation has the right to self-defense. You don't need to go to the UN to get self-defense. That doesn't mean invading an entire country. But it means that when you have actionable intelligence about a terrorist act, and you can prove it, as I think India can, then they should take action. India should say to Pakistan, you clean this up or we will. Now, this may sound very harsh, but I think Pakistan should support this. I think the government is relatively weak, and I would like to see Pakistan and India work together on this. I agree with you. India is doing the right thing. India is saying, Pakistan, you go, you find these people, you bring them to justice. And it's giving Pakistan a chance to do that. And that is exactly the right way to go.
Let's take this one step further.
By announcing that they have the right of self-defense, though, they encourage Pakistan to do the right thing.
No, he didn't announce that we had the right to self-defense. He announced he was going to invade the sovereign territory of Pakistan.
What he announced
was exactly what Obama
said. Obama said, if we have actionable intelligence of an al-Qaeda training base or Osama bin Laden, and the Pakistani government is unwilling or unable to take them out, and those are the words he used, take them out, we will. He didn't say he's going to do a full-scale invasion of Pakistan. He's going to do 100,000.
Now we have different levels of invasion?
Yes, there's a difference between a fly and a swarm. There's a difference between attacking a terrorist base.
You never differentiated invasions before Obama
was
elected.
I've
never heard of it.
I've always differentiated. As you know, I supported the Israeli attack on the Syrian nuclear plant.
Let's take it one step further.
And on the Iraqi nuclear plant.
Let's take it one step further.
The difference between Democrats and Republicans, Mike, is that we understand that there are levels of action to take. Bill Clinton can send one cruise missile in.
Into an aspirin factory.
For Republicans,
into an aspirin factory.
There's full-scale invasion using all of our troops and all of our force and all of our money, or there's nothing at all.
Okay, let's take this one
step
further.
It seems to me that there are gradations.
You're avoiding... All right, let's take the gradation up further. Let's say that we know that there is a hotbed of activity in the western provinces of Pakistan in the mountains, which we do know.
A hotbed of activity? You mean an al-Qaeda training camp?
I'm talking about probably 10 al-Qaeda training camps.
Okay.
I'm talking about, you know, a lot of things going on. We're 99% certain that's where Bin Laden's hanging out, you know, although we can't pinpoint which tree he's hanging in. You know, we know he's there. Let's say that there's a resurgent al-Qaeda. I mean, al-Qaeda is so devastated out.
I think it is resurgent.
Bush has basically won the war against al-Qaeda.
That's not true at all.
No, it absolutely
the Taliban
is.
Taliban has more power now than it's
I'm not
had.
Talking about the Taliban. I'm talking about al-Qaeda, which is devastated and incapable of carrying out another attack the way they did on 9/11. But let's say...
Mike, we have to take another break.
Well, let me pose the question that the viewers can think about it, and that is... If we send 2-3 divisions to make a 90-day sweep through the provinces to search, find, and destroy those camps, do we need UN permission for that part?
Of course not. Of course not. We have to take a break. But the whole point is that al-Qaeda is resurgent. It's resurgent in Afghanistan.
Al-Qaeda's fight on
our back. We have to take them out while we can.
Al-Qaeda's fight on our back.
888-48 Mark. We'll be right back.
Some dreams are universal. Dreams that inspire us. Multiple sclerosis is a devastating disease that changes lives forever. The National MS Society does more for people with MS than any organization in the world. But we can't do it alone. To get involved, visit us online at nationalmssociety.org. Or call 1-800-FIGHT-MS. This is why we're here. Because nobody dreams of having multiple sclerosis.
What's wrong with this picture? Half of young Americans can't locate economic powers like Japan and India. 20% can't even find the Pacific Ocean. Without geography, our children aren't ready for the world. Geography is everywhere. It's incredible creatures. Rhythm. Fashion. Flavor. It's economics and politics. It's change. Understanding connections between people and places is critical in the 21st century. That's why we created MyWonderfulWorld.org. Go there now for your free parent and teacher action kits and give our kids the power of global knowledge. because kids who understand our world today can succeed in it tomorrow.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We will get on to internet gambling and the economy in just a moment. But Mike, I really want you to answer this general philosophical question, because every time I ask it, you go around, you attack Obama. And I want just a general philosophical question. If it's right to take an action, whether it be torture or secret prisons, which I think is wrong, or whether it be taking out a terrorist camp, which I think is right, if it's right to take an action, why not announce to the public, if you believe in torture, we torture, instead of lying as the president does. If you believe in secret prisons, say, we have secret prisons. We won't tell you where they are, but we believe in secret prisons. If you believe in imprisoning Americans without trial, say so openly. If you believe in, I don't believe in any of those things, but I believe in, if you have actionable intelligence of a terrorist training camp, of people that have attacked the United States of America, take them out. Kill bin Laden, why not say our policy? If it's right and you can defend it, and I believe I can defend it as Obama can, why not just tell the world the truth? Wouldn't we be respected more if we actually kept with and did the things we said we do?
You know, Mark, there are a couple things. Number one, in any military action, one of the things you learn when you're in the military is that the element of surprise.
I'm not talking about which cave or which day. Yeah. I'm just saying the
element of surprise is very important.
To say in general we'll attack you. I don't mean saying which cave or what time, what day.
To say in general that you're going to attack them is to telegraph your policy. And you have a better chance of surprising them if you haven't telegraphed your policy than if you have.
Don't you think bin Laden knows we're trying to kill him? I've given away the United States secret.
No.
We're trying to kill bin Laden. Don't tell him.
I believe
he hasn't figured it out yet.
There is a certain level of confidence on behalf of the terrorists. If they are in what they consider to be a protected zone, they will not have their guard up and they will not be as on edge as they would be if they think they're in an open zone. When we telegraph that a sovereign country, Pakistan, is an open zone, we put them on a heightened alert as opposed to if they are, you know, when you pick up the intelligence items that are actionable, it's got to be, you know, something that you're getting from these people. It's something that they've done wrong.
All we have to do is telegraph this.
Well, no,
it's very simple.
I'm telling you, Mark, you are giving them an advantage by telegraphing it to them, and you are creating turmoil and making it more difficult for the Pakistani government to control those provinces when you say on an open microphone in the presidential campaign that you're going to invade that part of the country because they're tough enough to control now and they are impossible to control once you say that you're going to invade.
The United Nations Charter gives every single nation the right of self-defense.
Then we ought to read it and
just
act on it.
Every nation, including the United States of America, should say out loud that if there is a terrorist group like Al-Qaeda, that we can prove, and we can, that they murdered 3,000 innocent Americans without warning, we have the absolute right, as George Bush once said, to hunt them down, dead or alive, capture or kill them wherever they may be. George Bush said, if a country is harboring terrorists, then we have a right to go into that country. It's one of the few things I think George Bush was right about.
Right.
What George Bush didn't understand is the difference between a pinprick and an invasion, an attack on a terrorist training camp, and an occupation of a country. But we have the right to take them out.
Okay.
Obama is right on this, McCain was
wrong. Where you're wrong on this and where Obama is wrong on this. And it's very serious because it shows Obama's naivete on this whole thing. And, you know, hopefully he'll come up to speed on things as he gets a little bit more experience. But where his naivete came out is, yes, saying we will hunt you down wherever you are is a specific threat, but a generic geography on the whole thing. When you say, yes, in Pakistan, we are going to invade Pakistan and we're going to hunt them down there, now what you've done is you've created a very specific problem among the tribal organizations that run Western Pakistan. You know, it's difficult enough for the centralized government in Pakistan to control their population as it is. But when you create unrest and unruliness among those tribes and make it even more difficult for the Pakistani central government, you've essentially made your job even harder. And that's where Obama's naivete comes in.
If the tribes don't want to get in trouble for harboring Al-Qaeda,
they know
what to do.
These are illiterate tribes.
I don't believe the tribes are stupid enough.
Yes, they
are.
If
you tell me,
yes,
well, no,
they
Mike,
are.
Mike, Mike,
they're geopolitical.
You're changing your story.
No.
First you say, if we say we're going to attack, the tribes will make things harder. And now you're saying the tribes won't understand if we say we're going to attack.
No, I'm not saying that.
It's
not at all.
Simple.
No, I was right the first time.
The tribes understand. Everyone understands that if you harbor a criminal, you are in danger yourself. That is the message that the United States and every democracy that's attacked by terrorists has to make clear. Otherwise, attacks like Mumbai will continue because terrorists will have a place to go where they'll always
be. And when you make the threat specific against the tribes in western Pakistan, that's when you create unrest. That's when you make it more difficult for the Pakistani
central
government.
We haven't said which cave. We haven't said which place.
Mark,
but
we have
made clear.
He said Pakistan.
Well, right.
That was his
It's a very large country.
That was his naive mistake.
It's a very large country. Let me move on to another gamble. Well, I think we are paying for it by having killed Bin Laden by now, which I hope we will.
Bin Laden's impotent right now.
I don't think so.
We heard from Bin Laden in the news?
I think we're going to find out that Lashkar-e-Taiba had aid from Al-Qaeda.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we're going to find out that Osama bin Laden is hardly impotent and that fingerprints of Mumbai will be on Osama bin Laden.
Absolutely Al-Qaeda was part of it.
I can't prove it yet.
No, absolutely Al-Qaeda was part of it.
Well, then he's not impotent and he's very dangerous. Let me move on to the question of gambling. Because there's two kinds of gambling, if you will, that is going on. One is the kind that, you and I both play poker. I happen to know that. We play for very small stakes. We like to play Texas Hold'em. I'm a big fan of the game, even though I play for very small stakes. The Republican Congress banned internet poker. They tried to ban it on the internet.
They
didn't really succeed because what they banned was money transfers. You can still play, but it's apparently the people who have the money are in trouble. It's a very messy bill. But the Republicans said, in effect, let's stamp this out, let's get rid of it, and people won't play poker anymore, much as the people who supported Prohibition in 1919 apparently thought that people wouldn't drink anymore. Well, they were wrong. We told them, and I have to tell you, I worked very hard against this bill when I worked for Congressman Barney Frank in the Judiciary Committee. Barney Frank is very strongly against this bill. We said, look, if you ban it, quote unquote, in the United States, it will just go offshore. It will just be unregulated. It will just be a no man's land out there. And what happened, lo and behold, they banned it. Now there are internet poker sites in Costa Rica, on a tribal land in Canada, and now they're blatantly cheating. Absolute Poker, Ultimate Bet have been hacked into. Some tens of millions of dollars, they've already proven, have been stolen. Isn't the right solution
to this? And stolen from the online players, from the company.
That's right.
Right.
Stolen the company and people, either the company or people who act into the company, stole tens of millions of dollars from Americans who were just trying to play a little gambling. Isn't the right solution to legalize it, regulate it? I'm very proud of the Nevada Gaming Commission. They've taken the mafia out of gambling. The casinos make a lot of money in Nevada, but they're legal and they're safe and they don't cheat. If I go into a casino in Nevada and I go all in, I know that I'm as likely to have the best cards as somebody else. It's the only fair way to do it. You can regulate it. You can even tax it, get a little bit of income. You can make sure it's fair. What the Republicans have done is they've taken something that is a fairly small vice, and they've made it into a chance for a bunch of people to rip off a lot of innocent Americans.
Mark, as you know, it's easy to regulate something when you have a gaming commission sitting right there in the physical casino, watching it, making sure, going around, testing things, etc. Actually, it's not even that easy because they can get away with cheating if they want to. Some of the smaller casinos actually do cheat. But for the most part, it's an up-and-up game if you go to Atlantic City or if you go to Las Vegas. Where it's not necessarily an up-and-up game, even in the United States, is on Indian reservations. There's no gaming commission that regulates the Indian casinos. There's nothing that makes sure you're not getting ripped off there. And I don't play in Indian casinos for that very reason, because I want to have some level of security. Now, how anybody would have a complete and total lack of brains to log on to an internet website and start playing poker or other gambling with real money is beyond me.
You're blaming the players.
No, I'm not blaming them. I'm saying they are as stupid as they come. And
you know,
I don't
people
feel...
want to play a little online poker.
Mark, it
it's
is
a dollar, $2 a day.
They are criminals.
Why
that are out there running these
something?
Sites.
Why don't... Okay, so there's an easy answer. You can regulate. It's not that hard to regulate it. You can
it
have
is.
People look at the
it
software.
Is.
You
it
can
is.
Look and see whether the software is fair. You can go in, as they do in casinos, Nevada Gaming Commission, and do these, you know, spot checks on
okay.
the Internet. A gaming commission can regulate the Internet, but what the United States decided is, no, we want all these
no.
Americans to be
no,
cheated.
No.
Why not regulate it and tax it, bring in money to America, make sure it's fair? And I'll tell you this. If Americans knew that there was an American company, you know, some casino in Las Vegas or Atlantic City, an American company that did this, that it was regulated, that it was taxed, that they made sure there was no cheating, I guarantee you Americans wouldn't be putting their money in some Costa Rican site. They would do it in an American site.
Well,
why? This
not,
is
not,
going
not,
to
not
happen
really.
No matter what.
Actually, they
why
wouldn't
not
do that.
Regulate it and make sure there's no cheating?
They wouldn't do that. And there's no way
of course
to stop
they would.
No, they wouldn't, Mark, because...
Why wouldn't people go to... They would
because,
rather go to a place where there's no cheating than the place where there is cheating.
Because how does the average gambler, not the good gambler, how does the average gambler decide where they're going to go gamble when they're going to a casino?
They know that if they knew the casinos weren't on the up and up,
no.
They would not gamble as much.
Assuming somebody's on a bus from where we originate this show in the Washington, D.C. area, and they're on a bus going to Atlantic City, how are they going to decide what casino they're going to go to? Just some average Joe. You know how he's going to decide? What rumors has he heard as to what place has the hottest slots?
You know what?
Which has the highest payouts? Those kinds of things.
If a casino is regularly cheating the public, people won't go there.
No, I'm not talking about cheating.
But here's the thing. What the Republican Congress did is they took something that was going to happen no matter what, and they removed all legitimacy, all chance of being protected, all chance of not being cheated, and made sure that the only place Americans could gamble was a place that was unregulated and unsafe and full of cheaters. Why not bring them in?
Right.
At the same time, we're going to talk about this in the next quarter hour, at the same time, on Wall Street, they allowed unlimited gambling. $65 trillion of gambling, completely unregulated. That was something the Republicans supported while they banned people playing, you know, dollar and $2 poker online.
Okay, here's what we ought to do. There's no evidence that you can control minors vote
sure
gambling.
Is.
No. There's no evidence yet that you can... Cause
you use a credit card.
Minors have credit cards. When I was a minor, Mark, I had a credit card.
You could,
okay?
I didn't mind. You
when I was
to,
a minor,
you,
I got
you
a credit
could
card.
You go to a credit
so,
card. Now, you right, go
here's,
to a credit
here's
card,
the thing.
And you can require them to distinguish
okay.
between those over
here's,
21
here's,
and
here's,
under
here's
21
here's the three
18.
Problems. Here's the three problems. There's no evidence that you can control minors from gambling online. There's no evidence that you can control problem gamblers from gambling online. And there's no evidence that you can actually regulate these things satisfactorily online because there's been no effort at any one of those three.
Okay.
What I support, and I agree with you, the attempt to ban this thing is not logical.
Complete failure.
It's going to be there. No, it's not a complete failure. American companies don't do it. So it's not a complete failure.
It's a complete failure because Americans are losing tens of millions of dollars to these shadowy people.
Well,
abroad.
Okay, shame on them, silly people.
Those people that drank during Prohibition because who knows if the alcohol's safe. It could be very dangerous.
Right.
You know, marijuana is a lot safer if you legalize and regulate it than if you buy from some shadowy dealer.
You know what, Mark? If you're going to buy shine from some, like, you know, off the back of a truck from somebody who just ran it down the mountain, you don't know what quality you're getting. So, shame on you.
User, whereas I would say this is going to happen. Let's make it safe for Americans.
Okay.
Let's legalize it and regulate it.
What we need is the congressman from Las Vegas wants to conduct a study on all these things, three things, to see if they can be enforced. I support that study. If
Shelley
they can,
Buckley.
Then we'll do it.
Democrats from Las Vegas. You know what? Let's skip the break. We got a lot to talk about. Let's just get rid of the break if we can, because I want to move on and talk about another kind of gambling. The gambling on Wall Street. Is that okay? Can you skip that? That'd be great.
This year, 28,000 Americans will be diagnosed with oral cancer. Every year, 7,000 Americans die of oral cancer.
I'm Eva Cohen, and I'm an oral cancer survivor. I didn't fit the profile. I didn't smoke or drink. I had no family history of cancer. No family history of cancer. I was 31 years old. 31 years old. I went to see my dentist about a sore in my mouth that wouldn't heal. It was oral cancer. I had to have a radical neck dissection and a portion of my tongue reconstructed. I didn't know if I was going to live or die.
I'm Surgeon General Richard Carmona. The survival rate for oral cancer is only 50%. Oral cancer can happen to anyone. If you have a sore or lesion in your mouth that doesn't heal within 2 weeks, see your dentist. Early detection is the key.
Early detection saves lives.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit PovertyUSA.org.
Two words for you. Pop quiz. Ready? Name any funny movie. A drama. Name a mystery. And one more thing. Name the movie your kids saw today in science class.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about two different kinds of gambling. One is the internet gambling of poker and other games that the Republicans banned. By the way, the bill banning internet poker allowed horse gambling because, well, let's face it, Senator Mitch McConnell's from Kentucky. In Kentucky, they have a lot of horse racing. So that gambling was okay. They give a lot of money to him, but not other gambling. Mike says that there's three problems with it. You can't regulate over the internet. Sure you can. There's Amazon and other companies take secure things all day over the internet. It can be done. We're just not doing it. The second thing you said, problem gamblers. Problem gamblers are going to gamble anywhere. If they can't do it on the internet,
they don't do it in casinos.
They'll do it in Atlantic City.
Their people are trained to recognize problem gamblers and to toss them out of the casino.
You know, a lot of people lose tens of millions of dollars in casinos. The last thing you said was minors. Well, I think there's a way out of that solution, too. I think that credit card companies and others, listen, there's pornography on the internet. They're supposed to get around minors. Many don't succeed. I understand that. But credit card companies, you know, you could say to a credit card company, because they run credit checks that have your birthday, that you could label some if you're over 18 or under 18. Let me go, though, to another form of gambling. One that I suggest to you is far more dangerous than internet poker. Far more dangerous. With a lot more amount of money at stake. Let me play for you a clip from another 60 Minutes episode.
It's legalized gambling.
It was illegal gambling, and we made it legal gambling. And
with no regulatory controls.
With absolutely no regulatory controls. Zero, as far as I can tell.
I mean, it sounds a little like a bookie operation.
Yes, and it used to be illegal. It was very illegal 100 years ago.
In the early part of the 20th century, the streets of New York and other large cities were lined with gaming establishments called bucket shops, where people could place wagers on whether the price of stocks would go up or down without actually buying them. This unfettered speculation contributed to the panic and stock market crash of 1907, and state laws all over the country were enacted to ban them.
Big headlines, huge type, the front page of the New York Times.
No bucket shops for new law to hit.
So they already closed up because the law was coming. Here's a picture of one of them. And they were like parlors, see?
Betting parlors.
Betting parlors, yeah. It was a felony. Well, it was a felony when the law came into effect because it had brought down the market in 1907. And they said, we're not going to let this happen again. And then 100 years later, in 2000, we rolled them all back.
A bill to reauthorize and then the Commodity Exchange Act.
The vehicle for doing this was an obscure but critical piece of federal legislation called the Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000. And the bill was a big favorite of the financial industry it would eventually help destroy. It not only removed derivatives and credit default swaps from the purview of federal oversight. On page 262 of the legislation, Congress preempted the states from enforcing existing gambling and bucket shop laws against Wall Street.
That makes it sound like they knew it was illegal.
I would agree. They did know it was illegal, or they knew it was prosecutable.
In retrospect, giving Wall Street immunity from state gambling laws and legalizing activity that had been banned for most of the 20th century should have given lawmakers pause. But on the last day and the last vote of the lame duck 106th Congress, Wall Street got what it wanted. The Senate passed the bill unanimously.
The Senate stands adjourned. Sine die.
There was an awful lot of trust us, leave it alone, we can do it better than government, without any realistic understanding of the dangers involved. Can
I get on? Columbia University law professor Harvey Goldschmidt is a former commissioner and general counsel of the Securities and Exchange Commission. He says the bill was passed at the height of Wall Street and Washington's love affair with deregulation, an infatuation that was endorsed by President Clinton at the White House and encouraged by Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan.
Let me suggest to you
that
this bill, this kind of gambling, is far more dangerous than any kind of internet gambling poker. Credit derivative swaps total, according to one estimate, $65 trillion, more than six times our national debt. People blame the subprime mortgages for the problems we're in. The credit derivative swaps are dwarf these. 96% of Americans have their homes. It was the side bets, and that's what they were, bets, side bets on whether or not you'd have mortgage. They didn't even call them insurance. Why didn't they call them insurance? Because insurance, you're required, you're regulated. And under insurance, you have to have a lot of money in the background to, you know, if you insure something, the insurance company has to have the funds there to back it up. They called them swaps. And the only reason they're legal is because of this bill. This bill, which, by the way, I did some research on, was passed December 21st, 2000, after the selection of George Bush by the Supreme Court, by the Republican Congress. They attached it to a omnibus spending bill, one of the things that keeps the government going. That, you know, I mean, I'm not condoning Clinton signing it, but he would have a hard time stopping the government because of this obscure bill that Alan Greenspan and others supported.
It's called a veto.
He'd have to shut the government down, George Bush would have signed it a month later.
But the piece made it clear that Clinton was very enthusiastic about this anyway.
Well, I don't know whether Clinton was enthusiastic or not. The bill was wrong. It was a huge mistake. It led to the Enron crisis of 2001. It has led to our economic crisis today. Can we agree that this kind of gambling has to be outlawed?
Well, the problem with derivatives is that they are so complicated. They are so amorphous that no one understands them, even people who are involved in swapping them day to day. Right now, the problem with derivatives is that no one knows how to value them because in today's market, first of all, there is no market for them in the current economy. There will be a market for them somewhere down the road. Nobody knows if that market's going to be high. No one knows if that market's going to be low. It is an extraordinarily complicated, almost impossible to understand aspect of our economy. I'm not a real fan of them. I'm not going to fight you on this one.
Okay, so you agree that these things need to be regulated, that this, you know, abandoning the bucket shop law of 1907 was a huge mistake, and that, frankly, we need regulation. Wall Street and the free market cannot be trusted without regulation.
Well, I don't think derivatives are our main problem right now.
They are.
No, the mortgage crisis is our main problem right now.
No, the mortgage crisis...
And Sarbanes-Oxley is similarly part
of
the problem.
That's ridiculous. The mortgage crisis is perhaps is no more than $1 trillion. These things are $65 trillion. The side bet swamps the main bet. It's like you bet on a sports team and you're comparing, you know, that the sports team gets, $1 billion for winning compared to the $1 billion bet on the game.
But Mark,
the tail is wagging the dog.
Here's the thing. These derivatives are worth something. We know they are worth something because they have value. But Sarbanes-Oxley requires that they be valued at zero because in the current economic climate, there's no market for them. So at 8:45 or 7:45 on Monday night today, December 1st, there's no market for them. Therefore, Sarbanes-Oxley requires that they be valued at zero.
Not at
what their value might be, and that's what's collapsing the whole thing.
It's the subprime mortgages that are our problem. We have credit rating agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Credit rating agencies, people like Moody's, Standard & Poor's. They rated these derivatives AAA. They rated these derivatives the very highest, safest rating you can get.
Not all of them, I assume. I mean, I
there has never been an incident since Moody's and S&P have been around where a AAA rated security has defaulted, and these have. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is very simple. The credit ratings agencies, the people selling these things,
no
people doing
that.
The subprime mortgages, the people in the banks, the Citibanks, and the Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers knew that they could sell this stuff. They could call it insurance even though it wasn't. They could tell people it was safe even though it wasn't. And the reason they could do that is because they got rich. They got rich. Oh, it's perfectly safe. They got rich. Let me tell you something. These people were no better, and indeed far worse, than those Costa Ricans who were cheating American gamblers on poker. In fact, they were far worse because they took our entire economy and they bet it under a system where if it goes up, everybody there gets rich. And if it goes down, we the taxpayers have to finance their bad bets. It seems to me the only way to stop this behavior is to say to corporations, you know what? If you make a bad bet, if you ruin your company, not only do you get fired, but you have to pay it all back. You have to give up those hundreds of millions of dollars, no golden parachutes, and to give shareholders the right to fire, because they're supposed to own the company, they should have the right to fire. They have free elections and say, you know what? You shouldn't be running this company anymore. We need to have real free market capitalism on Wall Street, and that means none of this heads they win, tails we lose kind of stuff.
All right, Mark. First of all, the people down in Costa Rica who are intentionally defrauding gamblers, this is out-and-out theft.
What do you think they were doing on Wall Street?
They weren't intentionally defrauding.
They knew it was a house of cards. No. They knew it was going to fall apart.
Hang on. The people down in Costa Rica, don't let them off the hook. They're criminals. They're high-tech criminals. They're high-stakes criminals. They deserve to go to jail for a very, very long time.
I'm fine with that, compared to Wall Street, they're small fish.
No. They're both fish.
They're pikers. They're, 20 million versus 20 trillion. There's a big difference there.
They're both big fish. They all ought to go to jail if there's intent to defraud. As far as the derivatives are concerned, there is still value left in those derivatives.
That's not the point.
I'll agree with you that we need regulation on these things because nobody knew
regulation.
What kind?
Strict regulation.
I said strict.
Let me tell you. Well, strong and strict. But let me tell you how
We'll argue over how.
Let me tell you how strict I'd make it. Ban golden parachutes. If your company fails, you
that's
don't get
paid. That's got nothing to do with derivatives.
We
want to regulate the derivatives.
People were gambling with other people's money. It's very easy
other
to gamble.
Other people were very happy to have that happen.
They weren't happy to have that happen. Yeah. We, the taxpayers, I'm paying for it, and I didn't put money in those companies. Why should taxpayers have to finance their bad bets?
Explain to me the nexus between a golden parachute and the fact that nobody knows how to value a derivative in today's market.
There's no nexus. Very simple. People were making bets on things they didn't understand because they knew that if it blew up, they wouldn't be punished. So it was a heads they win, tails we lose kind of thing. And people were actually punished for the mistakes they made.
You've lost me on that one, Mark. I don't know.
I think my listeners will get
it. I don't think it was
if you
want
to comment on the show, go to RadioInsightsGeek.com and let me hear something. Sometimes.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome back to reality. By now,